Hey friends, welcome back to this week's episode of Fit Friends Happy Hour. I'm your non-diet dietitian, trainer, and host Katie, and this is episode 300. Today, I'm excited to bring you an expert on today's topic that I personally have had some issues with, or I shouldn't say me personally, my husband, Joey, has had some issues with, but therefore it has definitely affected me personally as we were navigating with him some gut issues. Particularly, long story longer, he met with a gastroenterologist who suggested that he experiment with the low FODMAP diet. And even as a registered dietitian myself, it was challenging. There were many challenges with navigating this. And so what I love about today's episode and the guest expert that you're going to hear from is we talk a lot about the right and the wrong way to do low FODMAP. And really just how to navigate digestive disorders in general. And I firmly believe that a great practitioner, a great dietitian, a great healthcare professional, you know, if it's not their specialty, they should refer you out. So while, yes, I know a lot about gut health and, you know, I know enough to kind of navigate this with my husband and my own family, I'm never going to take on a client where I know that they may be better served by someone else with more expertise, with more resources. So I just want you to keep that in mind, keep that nugget in your back pocket. If you are ever struggling with a specific medical condition or, you know, even when it comes to body image and, you know, the intuitive eating work, like go to the experts. There's so many people and that are experts in one area. So why not, you know, narrow it down if you can. Samina is the founder and registered dietitian at Wholesome Start LLC, which is a virtual GI nutrition practice based in Houston, Texas. She specializes in helping people who struggle with irritable bowel syndrome, also known as IBS, and their relationship with food to nourish their bodies without rigid diets, stress, guilt, or shame. And we are all about that here at Fit Friends Happy Hour. Her wellness philosophy is derived from the principles of intuitive eating and health at every size framework. And she encourages her clients to use, you know, to care for their health in a way that really best honors their lifestyle, their unique needs, their cultural traditions, and respects body diversity. Through nutrition coaching, just like here at our practice, her clients are able to address the root causes of their digestive distress, so they can live a life without food fear. When she's not working with clients, Samina loves going on walks with her dog and daughter and exploring new restaurants in town with her husband. All right, team, I know you're going to love this episode. If you could please share it on Instagram, share it with your friends, your family, because that is how we reach people to get this message across. Welcome to Fit Friends Happy Hour, a podcast about all things nutrition, fitness, and life in your 20s and 30s, all from a non-diet lens. I'm your host, Katie Hake, and I'm a registered dietitian nutritionist and certified personal trainer. Join me here every week as I talk with interesting people and experts from all walks of life about their relationship with food and their bodies. I'll also share my experience working with clients in my private practice to help women find food freedom and body confidence. I'm on a mission to help you stop quantifying and start living. Learn to stop measuring your success by the scale and find your fears. Hi, Samina. Welcome to Fit Friends Happy Hour. We're so happy to have you.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to chat.
So let's kick off the show. Just tell us a little bit about yourself. And first of all, how did you become a dietitian? But more specifically, how did you start specializing in digestive disorders?
Oh, it's been such a long journey. So I went to undergrad thinking I would be in some health profession. So I ended up in, you know, pre-med. And then I was like, ooh, not for me. Wanted to be in a helping profession. And I was really into the preventative aspect of nutrition and started working at the corporate fitness kind of wellness program there at my university and saw the dietitian there and was like, oh, this is something I could do. I can help people learn how to make changes to their behavior, whether it be nutrition or fitness related, and help them reduce their risk for chronic disease. And so I took that first nutrition class and kind of went through it and was like, okay, I'm for sure sticking with nutrition as my major, went through it, applied to the coordinated program at that school, didn't get in the first time. So if there are any dietetic interns listening here, I did not get into my internship the first time I applied. Ended up graduating and working at a nutrition informatics company. And then
Can you explain to listeners, what does that mean, nutrition informatics? It sounds like a fancy term.
Yeah, that's a great question. So I was helping a really big food company at the time, nutrition labels. This is back in the day, y'all, where food companies did not have to put their nutrition label on the internet. So if they were looking up a food product, they didn't have to list the nutrition or the ingredients or anything like that. So I was doing the back end work with that company to collect all the information from the companies about their products and listing it on this bigger company's website. So it was a lot of data entry, but it kept me kind of busy until my dietetic internship started. So that went on, and I focused primarily more on corporate wellness. And so I went through all of the rotations, really saw firsthand that clinicals was not for me. And so I started my career in corporate wellness after I graduated and became a dietitian. I was hired by a small insurance company, and they wanted me to help them head up their wellness program and to reduce insurance use and help with population health risk management. And I was all about that prevention, right? And so what I saw was I ended up working there for a little over 6 years. And this was my first job ever. And throughout working at this company, I found intuitive eating and health at every size. And I tried to make this wellness program as non-diet as possible, but I was getting a lot of pushback there.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but I was going to ask you about how your experience with corporate wellness was like, because I feel like many dietitians listening, I experienced the same thing, like going in as a new graduate thinking like, this will be so easy. This makes sense. This is what the general population wants, but then actually trying to implement it can be a huge challenge. So what were some of the challenges you faced in that specific setting with kind of introducing this countercultural model?
Yeah, absolutely. So my job was I worked for a small insurance company. So I had a CEO that I was communicating with, like my own CEO of the company I was working with his ideas of what he thought wellness was. And he was very entrenched in diet culture. He was a professional golfer, like all in it, right? I was working with the CEO of our company and the HR of the companies that we were working with. And what I noticed is that everyone is really entrenched in diet culture. And so the pushback I was experiencing was, hey, these are some programs we can implement to help encourage health promoting behaviors. But everything I was hearing back was, well, why aren't you focusing on weight loss? Why can't we do a Biggest Loser? Why don't we have a competition for step count or eating as little as possible? And what I was doing on the side was, yes, implementing some of these like health promoting programs into these companies, but I was the individual dietitian counseling the employees one-on-one. And what I found after working with thousands of people was that the more entrenched they were in diet culture, the worse their digestive system was. There's a big overlap between disordered eating and GI health. And so at that time, I was taking a continuing education program that really focused on GI health. And I started to notice this trend. And I was like, okay, I really, really saw a gap in care for those who were struggling with their relationship with food and gut health. So I started my own private practice while working full time, as is the case of so many dietitians. So, you know, the more people I saw with IBS specifically in my private practice, the more I found my passion for helping people who struggle with this condition. There's so much fear around eating when you have physical digestive symptoms. I love helping people now break free from food fears and learn how to nourish their bodies in a balanced and gentle way for long-term gut health.
I love that. That's such an interesting just story and kind of path that you took. I always love hearing just people's story with food. You know, a lot of dietitians themselves have experienced that kind of the area that they specialize in. So it's interesting that you had that overlap between corporate wellness. So can you tell us about when you say you noticed a lot of digestive distress, you know, what were some of the common symptoms or things that you noticed to kind of make you go, oh, wait, this is happening to a lot of people. What were some of those signs?
Yes. So I was noticing main complaints of bloating, gas, diarrhea, constipation, acid reflux, indigestion. And most of the concerns I was hearing from bloating were, I don't eat all day. And then when I eat, I bloat. And so there was a lot of disconnect between the understanding of what bloating is or what it feels like to have a full belly after restricting chronically or long term.
So interesting. And you're so right. I see the same thing. A lot of people don't recognize the connection, right? It's kind of this mindless eating or eating based on these external rules or, you know, all these different factors that diet culture tells us how to eat that they're so disconnected from their body. So today we're going to talk specifically about IBS, disordered eating, kind of how those overlie. But I first want to dive into the low FODMAP diet because, so maybe let's start there. Just can you define for our listeners, what is the low FODMAP diet and how you've seen it in practice?
Yeah, absolutely. So let's first start talking about the acronym FODMAPs, right? It stands for fermentable oligodimethylmonosaccharides and polyols. I know this is all a mouthful, but FODMAPs are carbohydrates that are not completely absorbed and digested in the gut. They are used as fuel or for our gut bacteria and are actually great sources of nutrition and fiber. So for people with IBS, consuming FODMAPs may worsen their symptoms of bloating, gas, diarrhea, constipation, stomach pain, and cramping. People without IBS usually have no issues eating foods that are higher in FODMAPs and don't need to follow a low FODMAP diet. So number one thing I say is if you don't have IBS, ignore the FODMAP diet.
And we're going to talk a little bit later. I want to get into kind of some of the, you know, challenges that you see from your perspective with like influencers out there. But back to the FODMAP diet. So how can that diet specifically send people into this spiral of restriction, especially whether or not they have IBS?
Right. So research done at Monash University showed that IBS symptoms improve in 3 out of 4 people who follow a low FODMAP diet. But that doesn't mean that the FODMAP diet is appropriate for everyone. So the FODMAP diet specifically has 3 phases. There's the elimination phase, the reintroduction, and maintenance. So just because there is this diet out there that has been shown in research to help improve symptoms of IBS does not mean that it's appropriate for everyone. If you're someone who struggles with your relationship with food, has a history of chronic dieting or binge eating or any other eating disorder or disordered eating, not for you. It may also not be appropriate for people who struggle with other mental health conditions like OCD, anxiety, ADHD, right? And so the challenges I see with the FODMAP diet kind of being thrown out there as the first line of help for IBS is that GI doctors are handing patients lists of low FODMAP foods that they should eat and high FODMAP foods that they should avoid. And so right off the bat, I have people coming to me saying, I can only eat this small list of foods. I feel like I can't eat anything. And I'm too scared to follow through with the reintroduction phase, which challenges some of these higher FODMAP foods to determine whether or not I am having a food reaction or these foods are triggering my symptoms.
So they're kind of just given this black and white list. And so that list from a physician's perspective or whoever it is giving that, you know, prescribing the diet should be a dietitian, but we won't go there, right? It kind of creates that fear, it sounds like.
Yeah. And without having that guidance from a dietitian, I think that if you are going to approach the low FODMAP diet, you absolutely need to be guided with a dietitian who's trained in it because think about it, I didn't have much training in FODMAPs or even how to treat IBS before doing more continuing education. So just because you're going to a dietitian doesn't mean they're well-versed in the low FODMAP diet or know how to apply it appropriately for your specific situation. So going into a little bit more detail about the low FODMAP diet, the elimination phase of the FODMAP diet should only be tried out for maximum 2 to 4 weeks. So if you're reducing your total consumption of these higher FODMAP foods and you're noticing fewer symptoms, great. That means that this was an effective trial for you. And now we can move on to the reintroduction phase, which challenges those foods to see if they are a trigger for you or not, or in what portion size you can tolerate them. However, if after 2 to 4 weeks of trying the elimination phase of the FODMAP diet, you see no symptom improvement, just stop there. It's not appropriate for you. Maybe you're going through some other things. Maybe there's a different underlying condition that could be going on, which could explain some of your symptoms. So don't think that you have failed the low FODMAP diet. If you don't find it to be effective within the first 2 to 4 weeks, there's another way for you to find relief.
I love that you mentioned that it's really important to work with someone who's specifically trained in this. You know, this is specifically as an area, even for myself, could I do it? Probably yes, right? Like I think of some clinical settings I've been in where it's, you know, maybe other dietitians listening feel this way where it's like me or nobody, or they're not getting this education.
Absolutely.
However, what I always tell people who reach out to me for gut disorders or IBS, I tell them, you know, I have information, but I'd be really doing you a disservice if I took you on as a client, because there's so many fabulous professionals like you who are specifically trained, who can give, you know, give somebody the tools that they need. And so I think it's really important for people listening, whether it's IBS, whether it's, you know, whatever it is that you're struggling with, if you can find somebody who specializes in it, you're going to get, you know, almost like a key to so many other resources that could help you. You also mentioned, you know, it might not be the right time. I think of kind of how intuitive eating, right? We don't jump into intuitive eating with everybody. If somebody has, let's say, a history of trauma or, you know, an eating disorder, it may not be the right time for them. Can we do it ever? No, that doesn't mean we can't. It just means we've got to address some other things, some foundational things before we trial this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, out there, there's so much information with gut health. I feel like it's such a trendy term. Like everybody's a gut health influencer now, right? And so some things I see that are really concerning online are for people who do have IBS with these wellness influencers are like, oh, just take a probiotic or this prebiotic blend or this greens powder and you're going to be good to go. Your digestion's going to be on point. When oftentimes I find that these worsen your symptoms.
Yeah. Tell us about that. Like specifically, because I see this all the time too, the probiotics, prebiotics, and if I get another question about greens, like just let's smash it right here. Tell us what's real.
Okay. So here's the thing. Prebiotics, they are fuel for the probiotics or healthy bacteria in our digestive system. However, oftentimes the prebiotics that are encapsulated are usually in the form of some type of inulin or chicory root fiber, which are high FODMAPs and can make your symptoms so much worse for those with IBS. And oftentimes these green powders, yes, they're a blend of different vegetables, but they have prebiotics added into them, whether it's chicory root or inulin powder or something from asparagus or other vegetable. And so we do have to be mindful of what we're consuming and make sure that there aren't any of these gastric irritants that can trigger your symptoms. And same goes with probiotics. You know, the research behind probiotics has not shown any long-term benefits from just taking a probiotic blend with as many strains as you can find in a pill, although that's how it's marketed to us. So if you have a certain concern with your digestion, you want to make sure that the strain of probiotic has been researched to help with that specific concern, right? So
I don't know about you, but that is a pet peeve for me when it's like, oh, just take a probiotic. It's like, oh my gosh, but you don't understand. That's such a blanket statement. To your point, there's so much more to it. And so what people, it sounds like, end up doing, they end up just buying something off the shelf that looks the most appealing, or it's a gummy, or has the coolest packaging. And it, what you're saying is, it sounds like it could, for especially with digestive disorders, end up doing more harm than good.
Definitely, definitely. And because the marketing to consumers, they're trying to make it as trendy and accessible as possible. What I'm seeing with probiotics is the multi-strains and the prebiotic blended into it as well. So you're getting the probiotic that probably isn't doing anything for you. And then you're getting the added prebiotic fiber, which maybe for people without IBS would be fine, but for those who struggle with IBS, is not a good combo.
So interesting. So what are some of the other challenges that you see then with kind of these, you know, gut health experts, or, you know, I have this gut healing protocol. It's only 4 weeks. I literally saw something on the airplane. This was a few months ago when I was traveling and I was like watching it. Like, this person was sitting diagonal from me, or whatever direction that is. And I saw it on their computer, their laptop. And it was some like, gut protocol or gut. I can't even remember. I think it was like a Beachbody program or something like that. And I was like, oh my gosh, what is this guy watching? This is like a businessman who clearly travels for work. And this thing is telling him to cut out all these foods. And I just imagine how my life stressful is traveling. It just drove me crazy. Yeah. So what are some of the challenges that you see specifically, and some of the harms in addition to that?
Absolutely. So I see also a lot of like throwing fiber at already constipated digestive systems. So, oh, you just need to take this like fiber supplement and you're going to be good to go. I also see a lot of elimination of food groups or types of foods for long periods of time, which really add to a little bit more of that food fear and preoccupation with food. And then also it doesn't help with our access to food, right? So I think with a lot of these protocols or gut health protocols or resets, is that they are giving you a cookie cutter thing to follow without taking into consideration your cultural background. What does your cultural cuisine look like? I come from Pakistani background, right? And so we eat a lot of rice and we eat a lot of curries. And what does a curry look like? How do you make the curry? What does it include any vegetables? There's no place for individuality with some of these programs and customization. It truly is like, hey, follow this to a T and you're going to be good to go. And that's just not how humans are. Everybody is unique. And it's really important to honor the person you're working with.
Oh, 100%. I love that you brought up the cultural differences as well. I think that's, gosh, we could do a whole nother podcast episode on just diet culture and, you know, what's considered, air quotes, healthy foods. Often if you use Google healthy foods, it doesn't have, you know, traditional cultural cuisines like rice or beans or things that, as dietitians, you know, those foods are totally normal and totally fine. But in like this wellness culture, they almost become demonized. And like you said, leading to that fear.
Yeah, absolutely. Or just feeling shameful that like, oh, my mom spent, you know, all morning making these fresh chapatis, which are like the brown breads, right? Mm-hmm. What were they made out of? They were made out of chickpea flour. If you didn't ask that question, you wouldn't know. Is it gluten-free? Is it, you know, like, so there's so much that really does impact how people are nourishing their bodies, and having a cookie cutter like pamphlet or webinar modules these days, right? On getting that can only do so much.
I like that you use the words like protocol, reset. There's always like these trendy terms, I feel like, now. So kind of back to working with a dietitian, right? Which is of course what we recommend here on the show. What for you are some of those non-diet approaches that someone can use to manage IBS that would be appropriate for someone who's kind of on this journey of healing their relationship with food?
So I always start with talking and learning from the client themselves how they're regularly nourishing their body, because I want to see if their diet includes any common gut irritants. And so before even jumping to the low FODMAP diet, are there things that you're regularly consuming or patterns in which you're consuming these things that are just upsetting your GI system? For example, are you drinking coffee on an empty stomach? Are you drinking alcohol on an empty stomach? What does the fat distribution of meals and snacks look like? Are you only consuming very spicy foods? Are you putting sriracha or like spices, like actual chili spice on everything you're eating, which, you know, my husband does that and has no problems, but for some people it can be an irritant. We also talk about, you know, non-diet interventions, which include looking at your mental and emotional health. How does your mood impact your digestive symptoms? We know that the brain and gut are connected through the vagus nerve. So there's bidirectional communication, which means our brain sends signals to the gut and our gut sends signals to our brain. With IBS, it is a miscommunication of these firings, right? And so your mood can absolutely impact how your digestive symptoms show up. If you're entering every meal in a stressed and anxious state, it is going to impact bloating, gas, diarrhea, constipation, stomach pain.
I think that's so interesting. I mean, I know that information, and I still, just hearing you say it, it's so fascinating. And I think it's such a good reminder for everyone listening, regardless of any diagnosis or condition that you have, about how much the brain-gut connection makes an impact on, you know, how slow you're eating and how you're digesting and how you're, you know, mentally, but also physically processing food.
Absolutely. So that's where kind of setting up an environment to eat calmly and then relaxed can really be beneficial. So that may look like practicing deep breathing, maybe some grounding techniques. I always like to use this one. Like, I have a grounding technique I use is describing something with all of my senses that's in front of me to just bring me back to the present moment. There's a lamp on my desk. The lamp has a manila shade with a gold rod and a marble base, right? Or you could do that with your food. What does it taste like? What does it smell like? What is the texture, etc.?
So what you're saying is not eating while you're driving and talking on the phone and trying to do a million things at once, which I know I can just envision a lot of our listeners right now. You know who you are, who you're trying to do all the things all at once. This is your permission right here to slow down, like actually eat at a table maybe would be a start.
Yeah. And even if, you know, I completely get it. I work with very high power professionals. And so they have meetings back to back. They're the ones traveling all the time. And if you can't get to a table or focus on eating in a calm environment, can you focus on chewing? Because we all have to chew to eat, right? Unless we have some issue there. But digestion truly does begin in the mouth. So if we can focus on chewing our food instead of inhaling it, does that make an impact on how our digestion functions?
That sounds so easy, but again, such a common thing that I think people skip, or they don't do, or they don't do it full. Maybe they're not chewing fully. And it's kind of like, yeah, these half chews to swallow.
Yeah, it happens. It happens to the best of us, but these little reminders can go a long way. And then other things. So I know, you know, you probably talk a lot about physical activity with a lot of your clients, and with IBS and digestion in general, high intensity exercise can impact your symptoms. So if you're noticing that you can't make it through a spin class or a Peloton class or whatever class it may be that's very high intensity, or you're noticing that as you're training for this marathon, you're just always getting diarrhea, it may be that form of exercise needs to be assessed to see if you can either take breaks or find a gentler form of movement, yoga, walking, or simply taking rest days to allow your body to recover.
Yeah, maybe just too much, too fast all at once, but just being aware, kind of part of that body awareness that comes in with intuitive eating and where this crossover is like just taking inventory. How does my body feel? You know, what does food feel like in my body? What am I feeling physically, you know, from my head to my toes, that it's all working together.
Absolutely. And then speaking of intuitive eating, meal timing can also really help with digestive symptoms. If you're going all day without eating and then finding yourself consuming a larger amount of food later on in the day, that can impact your digestive symptoms, right? So we want to make sure that you're adequately nourishing yourself consistently enough throughout the day so that we can avoid some of those situations, right? If you're eating three meals and three snacks throughout the day, it gives you plenty of opportunity to space out your meals, give your body an opportunity to digest what you're eating, and then help you not go into each meal in a ravenous state. Because if you're already at that hangry point, there's no way that you can
No one's calm in that setting.
Nobody's calm. There's no way you're focusing on chewing. There's no way you're enjoying your meal because it's like survival mode. Let's get it all in as fast as possible. And that happens sometimes, and that's okay.
Yeah. So it sounds like looking for the overall trends and kind of looking at your week and taking a snapshot, you know, picking one or two things is a place to start. And these are all really, I love that these are all small, kind of doable, but again, it's so easy to overlook a lot of these. They're almost like habits, would you say?
Yeah. Yeah. Habits is a good word. And then one last thing I wanted to mention about the FODMAP diet. So I know we've been talking about non-diet approaches to managing IBS, but when I work with my clients and I know they have a history of disordered eating or recovery from an eating disorder, I do something known as like cherry picking high FODMAP foods and swapping them out for lower FODMAP options without telling them specifically what I'm doing, right?
So What does that mean? Tell us more.
Right. So if I notice that, Katie, you've been eating a lot of onions and garlic and beans, and you haven't been including protein or rice or easily digestible carbohydrates, I'm going to say, hey, we need to restructure your meals to include a variety of foods to help displace some of these highly fermentable foods that you're consuming. So instead of having beans and lentils and this raw plate of vegetables, why don't we prioritize maybe a smaller quantity of beans, a smaller quantity of cooked vegetables, easily digestible form of carbohydrate, whether it be rice, rice noodles, or potato, and then a protein that you enjoy eating, right? So at least we're giving space to other components of food and not front-loading all of our meal with lots of fiber that can make your digestive symptoms worse.
Yeah, I love that kind of picking and choosing and recognizing that even with, you know, what can seem maybe for somebody listening, if they've recently gotten this diagnosis or they've had it, but maybe they haven't necessarily been managing it like they have hoped or have in the past, that there are things that you can do. It doesn't have to be black or white. It doesn't have to be kind of all or nothing. There's strategies that you can do and implement. It sounds like at a slower pace, yeah, if that's what you need.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's either called cherry picking or like the gentle low FODMAP, where you assess the person's diet for high FODMAP foods and prioritize the lower FODMAPs that way. So there's plenty of options, whether it be non-diet or medical nutrition intervention for managing IBS.
I love that. I think there's so many just golden nuggets that I think people can take away from today's episode. So you obviously give so much information on social media and all the places. So you're like me, for those, obviously this is a podcast, but we've been like muting ourselves, coughing. If you can't tell, I'm getting over a cold. So I'm like pressing my mute button, coughing up a lung, taking a sip of water, and then unmute. Okay, we're back. The beauty of podcasting. But so where do you like to hang out? Where can our listeners, you know, find you and learn more?
Oh, I love meeting people and having people join me or my community on Instagram. My handle is antidiet.ibs.dietitian. I'm also antidiet.ibsdietitian on TikTok. And that's where I'm most active. I'm currently enrolling clients in my IBS Food Freedom Package, where I help you learn how to nourish your body and find relief from your uncomfortable gut symptoms without rigid diets, stress, guilt, or shame.
We are all about no rigid diets, no stress, guilt, and shame. So Samina will be sure to link to all those, all the places you can find her and her program in the show notes. And we always like to end up our shows with just on a high note. I mean, this has been a high note already, but what is the best thing that's happened to you this week?
Okay. So I have a 2-year-old daughter. Picking her up from school and seeing her run to me, and like we go to the park and she plays at the playground on the swing, is just the highlight of my day. It is so cute.
The little things and just the joy from a 2-year-old's eyes. I was on auntie duty this weekend, and my niece and nephews, the youngest is like 2 as well. And they're just,
okay.
It's so sweet. It's so pure.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so fun. When it's good, it's good.
Amen to that. As I recover from this coughing lung from probably watching the toddlers all weekend. So thanks again so much, Samina, for being here. And again, everybody go check out her Instagram, check out her program, and we'll talk soon.
Alrighty. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Fit Friends Happy Hour. If you liked this episode, don't forget to share it with a friend. You can subscribe or follow wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also find us on Instagram and Facebook at Fit Friends Happy Hour. Talk to you next time.